If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
And you're very welcome back to TIP today, 1-800-938-007. Martin is getting quite a bit of traction there, and we will get back to that a little later on in the programme. But Cynthia Navarro is running in the Ireland South constituency for a seat in the European Parliament. She's a former RTE journalist and broadcaster who was lucky enough to present the Eurovision Song Contest on two separate occasions. She's a qualified barrister, certified mediator, working primarily in family law courts, trained as a teacher, is bilingual and passionate about the Irish language. God, that's a mouthful, Cynthia, but you're very welcome. How are you?
It's lovely to be on air, lovely to speak with you, and of course to your listeners.
And it's good to see you too. You're on the trail. Are you exhausted at the moment?
I am on the trail. No, I'm not exhausted. I'm having porridge morning, noon and night. I'm bringing little packages of this, that and the other, little boosters with me. But it is required because it is a vast trail, campaign. We've got 10 counties all the way from Wicklow across to County Clare. That is Ireland South. And by the way, Fran, nobody really knows what Ireland South is. It's Leinster and Munster. That's the way I try and explain it to people.
Tell me about the relationship with Fianna Fáil, because I'm not quite clear about that. Were you always a member of Fianna Fáil, or were you asked to put yourself forward?
I was in the closet. That's the best way to describe myself. I was in the background. I was not a formal member of Fianna Fáil when I was in journalism. Obviously, I was prevented in UJ rules and all that of being a member of a political party. But I was always involved with party members and behind the scenes and so forth. And in fact, I was asked to run for Fianna Fáil in an election in Dublin South East, in that constituency, way back in the day when I was a journalist. I considered it. It didn't suit me at the time. I was going to embark on legal studies. But it was always there in the back of my mind. So there was never any other question but it would be Fianna Fáil. Philosophically, politically, even ethically, it was always going to be Fianna Fáil. I share their views. They're a progressive party.
There's often cynicism and often resentment with the notion of a celebrity name or somebody with name recognition being put out there by a party. And sometimes the grassroots aren't all that happy with that because they're saying, well, why don't you put so-and-so who did all of the legwork and all of the hard work? What do you say to that?
Well, what I say is, first of all, I'm absolutely surprised and chuffed, and sometimes I get a giggle when I'm referred to as a celebrity candidate, because 30 years ago is not today or yesterday. That's when I presented Eurovision and Riverdance was launched onto the world stage. But yes, of course, name recognition is there, Fran. It was an iconic moment in time. I co-presented it with Gerry Ryan, and people, everybody in the land remembers, and even outside of Ireland remembers, where exactly they were on the night that Riverdance was born. And of course, myself and Gerry Ryan, the late Gerry Ryan, the wonderful Gerry Ryan, we were privileged to actually be on stage and to witness it up close firsthand. So, celebrity candidates. I would consider myself a candidate. I've been a lawyer for 27 years since I left media, and I've been working extremely hard in all of the courts all over this constituency and indeed in Dublin, and I've been helping families to overcome really difficult cases and individuals as well between the family law courts and the civil courts. What I say about, if you want to go back to the celebrity candidate, is they bring fresh views. People from outside of politics, like myself, or formal politics, if I could put it that way, a fully paid up membership, they bring new ideas, new attitudes, and I'm a really, really active person. I'm very can-do, I'm very collaborative, and I'm also, Fran, very empathetic. I've had to develop those skills as a mediator and as a lawyer, because it's very important to want to understand your client's view and to want to not only represent their view, but maybe tell them where the shortcomings are in their view of the case or their view of the matter and how we need to get around that.
It's interesting you speak about representing the views of the people, but I mean, the perception is out there at the moment that politicians are not representing the views of the people at all. And I'm thinking about the big issues, whether it's immigration or whether it's housing or whatever, that people feel not represented. I mean, what are you hearing on the doorstep?
Yeah, with regards to that not representation, unfortunately, a very hard minority and a minority that doesn't represent me are absolutely dominating this agenda and this space and this discussion in relation to immigration. And it is not part of my ethics.
A minority, you think?
Yes, it's a minority. It's the minority we saw in Newtown Mount Kennedy. It's the minority we saw marching over the weekend. It's the minority that are banging loudly and talking the loudest. And it is now time for the media and myself, public representative and established public representatives, and anybody commentating on the media, to actually engage in positive dialogue that is logical, that is ethical, and that is very, very fair to the immigrants. First and foremost, they are human beings. They have a heart, they have a soul. They have come from desperate situations. Yes, of course, I understand the argument of reasonably minded people, and these are the people I do hear on the doorsteps, Fran, who say, I am not racist. I am not against these people coming, and they are genuine in that. But what they do raise is the issue of there is not enough capacity, whether it's doctors, creches, schools, chemists, whatever.
Even, and that's a reasonable argument.
It's a very reasonable argument. But I'll tell you what, those people are being denied the right to say that or the opportunity to say that. But luckily, I notice in the last week, we are now hearing more of those very reasonable, charitable voices. And that's what Irish people are. If you go to the core of people, they are hospitable and welcoming.
Is that because politicians are finally listening in some way? Because you talk about a minority, but I mean really 80% of Irish people have an issue with how immigration is dealt with.
Yes, but they don't have an issue with the immigrants. Sorry, that's my point, Fran. They don't have an issue. Who would deny a Ukrainian who's escaping from the tanks of Putin and all that violence that we see unfolding? And obviously, all the immigrants that are escaping torture and discrimination based on their sexual orientation or based on the fact that they're just a woman, who would deny them a place of sanctuary in Ireland? Nobody, no right-minded thinking person, except that minority, which is full of venom, full of hatred, and is definitely stirring the pot and using the issue of emigration deliberately.
And if a right-thinking person would say to you, Cynthia, yeah, that's fine and very well, and of course we'll embrace people, and we have shown how wonderful we can be.
Yes.
But when we can't do it for our own people,
yes,
and this is the argument I presume you're hearing all
absolutely
the time, when we can't do it for our own, do we not need to rethink where we are?
Absolutely. And we are rethinking it. My heart goes out to all the young people who feel that they can't afford to get a home here in Ireland, or the middle income, middle aged people who feel they can't get a home in Ireland. Of course, we want to rectify that. But Housing for All, the programme that was rolled out 4 years ago, because we're only in the fourth year of the government, is working. Is it working fast enough? Of course it's not, Fran, but we have built 33,000 houses nationally over the last year. That's an increase of 20% from the previous year.
Social housing?
Exactly. It's not enough for everybody. There has been social and affordable as well, Fran. Nowhere near enough. But can I just say, Fran, and I think the voters and the people that I'm meeting, people that I meet on the doorsteps or on the street predominantly, they do understand that there is action on the part of the Housing Minister, Dara O'Brien, or there is action on the part of the government, not just in relation to housing, but also and only very laterally in relation to immigration. But they it's not happening fast enough. Could I just say in relation to immigration, we've heard the phrase perfect storm and people have poo-pooed it and they've disregarded it. But think about COVID, Fran. A couple of years ago, nobody was travelling. We saw some immigration, maybe in the amount of hundreds, maybe close to 1,000. But now we're going to have 20,000 perhaps by the end of this year. So the government, albeit the naysayers will say, should have been absolutely prepared for this. It came on top of the immigration and the movement and the war in Ukraine. It came on top of our housing issue, where we were building but not building fast enough. And of course, it should be housing for everybody, and in particular our citizens who have worked so hard and paid taxes. But can we just be clear? The immigrants who are coming are not getting permanent housing. They are getting tented accommodation, or they're getting direct provision centres, or they're getting very temporary abodes, which are so basic, Fran, that you and I wouldn't even, you know, consider.
But we are seeing some vision from the government where housing immigrants are concerned, and we're talking about now opening up abandoned buildings and vacant properties and doing something about that, and we're seeing a speed,
yes,
of that that we would like to have seen, I suppose, in the past.
Yes, we would.
But there's so many other things I'd love to talk to you about. Farming is very close to your heart, isn't it?
Very close to my heart.
Yeah, and I saw you at the hustings that was organised by the IFA. But farmers are frustrated like hell out there.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I like to think that I live on a farm. I actually don't, but I'm surrounded by farmers, which is lovely, just on the edge of Carlowtown and Oak Park. And I have the back door into Chagas headquarters. So I walk through there every day. I see see the crops growing, I see the animals, I talk to some of the lads who are working there, and I have a feel for farming every day of my life. But I suppose I also have a great understanding of farmers and the awful pressure that they're under at the moment, because I have been representing them for over 25 years in the courts in various different cases, and that means that I have to look at their farming enterprise, their business plan, I have to look at their type of system. And I've seen huge changes in farms, but the one thing I've seen in the last 5 years is that farmers are not listened to. And that's very clear. And now it has come to a head with their Enough is Enough protest. It didn't surprise me that that was launched in the run-up to the elections and so forth. So we have got to continue with the nitrates derogation. That's a definite because of our grassland system. And we've got to do it and prove that we have clean water as well. They can't be mutually exclusive. So I will be fighting hard to get that nitrates derogation continued. We have to roll back the red tape. They're absolutely crucified. I made a farm visit very early on after the nomination, and I was presented with a huge box of A4, reams of A4 paper, to be told that these are the amount of regulations that have come in the last year for farmers to read and to sign up to and look at. Farmers need to farm, and we need to trust farmers. They are the number one custodians of the land. They are so aware of climate change, which you were speaking about earlier on, I think, to one of your contributors. They want to protect their farming enterprise and indeed the environment. They're ploughing a lot of money into green initiatives such as water improvements on the farm, but they need to be paid for all of these activities and all of these business projects which they are taking, because Fran, their bottom line has been affected. Did you know that the average income of a farmer last year was under 25,000? How is that viable for a farm family?
Well, I want farm families
to survive.
But you must, I mean, from talking to them, you must realise they don't feel represented by Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. They don't even feel represented at this point by the farming organisation, Cynthia, you know? They feel that they're isolated, and the finger is pointed at them all of the time where climate change is concerned.
Yes, it is. And they were the only ones, the farmers, that were given a roadmap to say, this is how the EU wants you to roll out all the just transition. But the other sectors, whether it's aviation, whether it's industry, whether it's manufacturing or whatever, they haven't been targeted as much as the farmers. So the farmers feel that they are being targeted and they feel that they're being walked all over. Could I just say, though, that politicians, they do acknowledge that politicians are listening, but what they're saying to me is the listening is over now. When you go to Europe, how fast can you get going in relation to continuing the derogation, rolling back the red tape and making sure that farmers are catered for?
Do you not think it's too late in a lot of cases?
No, I don't.
We have an aging farmer now. We have younger farmers not interested anymore. They're going about their business, and we're hearing all the time, particularly here in Tipperary, about great tracts of farmland being sold on to people who are buying huge amounts of it now. Can you turn this around?
Yeah, there's one thing, Fran, that I firmly believe in, and it possibly comes from being a family lawyer or being even a lawyer in any of the civil cases, and that is it's never too late to do anything. And it only takes one person or two people or three people to advocate. And that's what I do. I speak up. I fight. I bang on the table. I make myself known. And once you drive that point with vim and vigour and energy, and that's what it takes. Some people might call it annoying, that you become an annoying voice, but the farmers do need a really strong voice in Brussels from the get-go. So if I am deserving enough to get elected, I will be working with the farmers from day one, and that's why I met with them from day one after my nomination, and I've continued to be engaged with them right throughout this campaign, because it's vital in my constituency, the South East, all those 10 counties and the South West, all the way from Wicklow to County Clare. It is vital that farming families are maintained, that they are protected, because I'll tell you what, Fran, they contribute so much to the local economy and they contribute so much to the social economy. So I'm a bit fed up hearing about, oh, environmental change and we need economic change and it's all about the economy and the environment. Well, wedged in the middle of this are real people, and there are social factors at play here. Farmers are very down, they're very depressed, they're very anxious, they're very under pressure, they are financially being crippled, they can't financially plan going forward, they don't know whether the derogation will be continued or not, they don't know whether the cap will be renegotiated and the green payments extracted from it. Can you imagine me running my business as a self-employed barrister on that basis? I couldn't do it. I also would be emotionally, and I would be very, very concerned and anxious.
Can I talk to you about the bigger picture, because if you're lucky enough to be elected, Cynthia, you may well be joining a parliament that is now going to veer to the right. And that seems to be what's happened. Does that concern you?
Yes, it does. I'm fully aware of that. But it doesn't concern me with regards to my mandate or my platforms that I'm standing on, some of which you've touched on. The other will be legislation in relation to protection of children, protection of yes. women and so forth. And we may not have time to go into that. But it doesn't concern me to the extent I will not be silenced. I will not kowtow. The ALDE party that I would be affiliated to, I'll become a member of if I'm lucky to be elected. They are the third biggest party in the European Parliament. They're a very pro-European group of people, and they're very proactive. You see, Fran, Europe really matters. And unfortunately, Ireland and the voters sometimes, in recent years, tend to send an MEP, they vote in somebody who actually is not pro-European, whether they're on the strict left or on the strict right, but they're not pro-European for the area. I mean, if you take, I'm sitting here in Clonmel. It's a town I love. I ran my first case in Clonmel. Kieran Cleary instructed me, the wonderful solicitor. He's a wonderful man. But can I just say, there are pockets of, Clonmel is a fine town, but there are pockets of County Tipperary that I have canvassed, such as Tipperary Town, that could benefit so much by direct investment from Europe under various funds, so that we could transform and help businesses and tourism initiatives and get more foreign direct investment. Look at Tip Town. It doesn't have an industry like a pharmaceutical industry, for example, that you have in Clonmel. You're so lucky to have them. But it doesn't have that whereby the whole town and people living there can benefit from the income that is spun
and
off.
Why
that.
Hasn't it benefited up until now? Why are we waiting for Cynthia
yes,
to go to Europe?
Well,
for
that is the question I ask. I would ask everybody
your,
listening.
Your party is out
yes,
there.
No, I'm going to say to you, look at the representation in your local area from the point of view of an MEP. What is the MEP doing for the people of Tipperary, Carlow, Wicklow, Wexford, Kilkenny, all of those areas on, if you like, my side of the constituency? Billy Kelleher is working extremely hard in the South constituency as well, but obviously it's a big constituency. He's based in Cork and there's Kerry and obviously Limerick County and so forth. But I can tell you, the voters in Tipperary, I believe, would be very well served by having myself elected if they gave me a vote, allied with Billy Kelleher. Imagine if we had double trouble on behalf of the voters and double power going out there to the European Parliament. It would be really good for the South. We have been left off the map of Brussels. You know, we've never had an MEP from Carlow, for example, one of the smallest counties. And there's other counties as well, which I won't pick out because I may get it wrong. But representation at European level is so vital for a region to flourish and to prosper, because you have a voice at the table.
But I've seen very little, and I'm doing this a long time, Cynthia, I've seen very little specific investment through an MEP into any area.
Well, for example, Waterford Glass, the visitor centre, benefited greatly. I'm not going to say which MEP benefited that, because I don't actually know, but there was huge European money put into that. There's huge European money put into roads and so forth. But an MEP, sorry, if you're questioning does an MEP actually have that persuasive power, yes, if the MEP is somebody like me who can argue. I use the word advocate, it's a big word, but it just means you go out and represent what you are seeking for the voters who have been good enough and considerate enough to give you that vote. And I'll tell you, I have worked in the South East all of my life in every court, ranging from Bray Courthouse and Dublin all the way down across to Limerick. And I've been in and out of every town, and I've represented clients from each and every little town and village and whatnot. And I know the problems and I can see where the holes are. And Fran, foreign direct investment, it has sorely, sorely been missing from this area. And yes, an MEP like myself can attract that into an area.
Can I put it to you about what the Sinn Féin European election candidate is saying about you, Paul Gavin? He described what you said as utterly shameful, your remarks made, where you compare the petition by the Irish artist calling on Bambi Thug to boycott the Eurovision to the oppressive tactics of that Israel is employing in Gaza. Do you regret that comparison?
Absolutely not. Unfortunately, Paul either A, didn't read the article, or B, read it and misunderstood it. So what I clearly said was I fully condemned the actions of the Israeli government and the army in relation to the torture and the persecution and the awful crimes that are being committed against the Palestinians and the people in Gaza. But the point that I was making was that art, namely the Eurovision contest, for anybody, song contest, for anybody who didn't read this article, art is above politics. And boycotting, I do not believe in artistic boycotts when we have Bambi Thug.
There was with Russia, as you know.
And, they, Bambi Thug, has stated openly, I just listened to her this morning in an interview, saying that she feels bullied. That, I call that out. That is not in order. Bambi Thug has been chosen democratically to represent this country. Bambi Thug is a wonderful artist. They are doing their best. It is the golden moment of her career, her artistic career. And we should not be signing petitions of 400 people to put that moral pressure on
her,
or that pressure on her to withdraw.
Those who have the power in the organisers of Eurovision should have made this call.
Well, certainly, that's exactly what Bambi Thug said. They is an easy target. Bambi Thug is an easy target. But of course, the EBU and the organisations, the broadcasting organisations, should be targeted. But you see, it's easy for the protesters and the people who signed that petition, 400 in total, it was vast, causing her and other artists to have to issue a statement on Twitter, which you probably read, condemning Israel, like myself. But again, that went unnoticed. So yes, of course, it should not be directed at the artist. Art is above politics. And I saw and I witnessed in Eurovision, I witnessed the joy of art, of presentation, of performance, of song, of sharing all the cultures. And it's so important as a European project. And I know it goes beyond Europe now, the Eurovision, but it's so important for peoples, cultures, countries, and real human beings to come together through art. Art is so important because it transcends all that venom and that hatred agenda that I spoke about at the top of the interview, which is absolutely deplorable and does not represent you or I, I don't believe.
Traditionally, art does reflect our thoughts and our wishes and often what's going on. There's that Bardic tradition, for instance, in this country where art documents what's happening
as
well.
Yes, but my point was that Bambi Thug, they should not have been targeted for a boycott when it was clear that she was properly chosen and it was the moment of her lifetime. And I thought perhaps it was unfair. In particular, I stand up for LGBTQ rights as well. I thought it was really unfair on Bambi Thug that they was being targeted like that as well.
Right. And how do you feel about Sinn Féin in particular calling you out on this? I mean, are you...
What I feel about Sinn Féin is that they flip-flop. So Sinn Féin are neither yes or no. In the main, they are no. Sinn Féin don't know what policy they are following on any given minute of the day, let alone any week of the year. So Sinn Féin say one thing, but then they shift. For example, on the immigration, such as tearing down the institutions in Northern Ireland, such as not knowing what they're doing with regards to the economy. Apparently, Davy Stockbrokers hosted them in London recently, in recent weeks. And now they're coming right from the left and they're coming towards the centre in relation to their economic policies. Where's that going to leave the hardcore vote for Sinn Féin? Nobody knows. Can they be trusted?
Well,
I don't believe they can.
They would disagree with you profoundly where that is concerned. And they might even point to some flip-flopping by Fianna Fáil over there.
They might, but could I just say, Fianna Fáil have been consistent in government in relation to the programme for government that was set out. Yes, of course, we have more to do in areas such as housing.
Damaging your party in terms of numbers, though, you know, and certainly the Green agenda would be seen to have damaged Fianna Fáil over time, you know.
Well, do you remember that Sinn Féin flip-flopped on going into government on the last occasion? So they won all these seats and then they backed out because they had to agree a budget or because they had to agree to go in with somebody. So Sinn Féin got frightened in the end and we ended up with a functioning coalition and the Greens are in there. And yes, of course, people have issues with the Greens, like I do, because Waterford Airport is a top priority for me to reopen.
You hit Eamon Ryan very hard.
I did, because Eamon Ryan has a report on his desk. I don't know whether he's opened it or read it or what he's done with it, but it says that there is a business plan, albeit weak, and I don't mind about it being weak, to reopen it. We need a regional airport. You know yourself, Fran, you'd much prefer to be driving up to Waterford Airport from Clonmel, like me from Carlow, and not having to go all the way to Dublin.
Can I ask you, I'm just about out of time, but something I'm going to ask if you put your barrister's hat on you for a moment. What do you think about the Asylum Pact, the European Asylum Pact?
I think the Asylum Pact is good. It's a start. It is necessary. There will be further discussions on it and tweaks on it. But I'll tell you one thing, Fran. We cannot go alone on the immigration and asylum issue. And Sinn Féin might think that we could go it alone and somehow we'll sort out all the immigration problem on our own. Absolutely not. It is fundamental that we cooperate with our European neighbours, because do you know why? And I don't know whether Sinn Féin realise this. This is a global issue and this is only going to increase. So we need all the cooperation that we can get. And look at the history of the EU over the last 50 years and more that we've been members. The cooperative approach, whether it's for farmers or whether it's in relation to other issues, whether it's business or rights for workers, the cooperative approach has really worked. And it's that cooperative approach that I want to be involved in from the inside.
All right. Really good to see you today, Cynthia.
Great. Thank you so much, Fran.
News and information is coming up.
Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage, puck on. You can't beat experience. With over 50 years maintaining Peugeot cars and vans, we like to call ourselves the experts. Call Slattery's Garage for a free vehicle health check today. 067 24111 or slatterysgarage.ie.